It's Parshat Korach, and the the familiar story with Korach is that he disagreed with Moshe, and there emerged a differences of opinion between Korach and Moshe and Aaron. And consequently, the results of which were earthquake. Now, it wasn't by chance last night, but I didn't want to maybe blow them completely away, is the idea that why would the lecture of last night, which was not planned other than a few weeks in advance, that this idea of earthquakes and the control of earthquakes are mentioned in this week's reading. In other words, last night is included. The idea that that an earthquake can occur and its prevention, which for the most part I have been criticized as to even suggest that man has the ability to, despite a decree, and even the Zohar goes into the idea of why and how earthquakes occur and when they occur and why they occur. But leaving that alone for a moment, what is discussed here is the miracle as to how the earthquake was contained and confined just to these 250 people. And there were the rest of the Israelis who had gone out of bondage from Egypt were also present. But no one was affected except Korach and his assembly, indicating that from the Torah at least that we can confine earthquakes, even such a chaotic condition that certainly seems beyond the control of mankind. That is, up until the present time, nobody has been successful in even detecting as to when a earthquake will occur. While there are many, much research done on the subject, they say dogs can notice or can detect an earthquake coming in advance and some other signs. But by and large, when the earthquake strikes, Chas v'Shalom, it comes without warning. I mean, there haven't been any signs as to how we can prevent or confine the earthquake. Therefore, this particular parsha of Korah, which may be in California, should be scanned each week, and then, incidentally, it's a very small parsha. It's a very small parsha. So, if you just want to scan the Zohar of Parshat Korach, which is in volume 14, then that is one of the surest methods by which we can, if not contain the earthquake, at least become a survivor and most probably protect the immediate environment that affects us. Sounds a little cruel, but that's the rule of the universe. Ignorance of the law is no excuse, and the fact that some people will reject the idea, because how could we control earthquakes? And so even, I remember, I think it was 2 years ago when I was going to lecture on earthquakes specifically and its full ramifications and how it fits in so clearly with the Zohar. Someone put in an advertisement in that, look at this man claiming that we can contain earthquakes. I mean, the audacity to even suggest what the Zohar suggests, it wasn't my suggestion, that we could even prevent earthquakes. How could we prevent earthquakes? If it's meant to be, that's the way it should be. I, for one, certainly do not subscribe to the idea that it was God's intention to punish us. I mean, like he wasn't. This is a singular purpose, because if you look at the development of civilization, they're always under the influence of some kind of natural disaster, whether it be flood or earthquake or fire or whatever the matter might be at that time. Therefore, having in mind that what is necessary in the prevention or confinement of earthquakes is, first of all, the realization that we have caused the earthquake in the first place, as I will shortly read, and secondly, that for those who might have been involved in the cause of an earthquake, nevertheless, at any given time, has the opportunity to remove oneself from this cause and effect idea, because it's not a decree of God that now he's prepared to punish a certain area of people, but rather on the contrary. The earthquake follows the rules of this universe, which is cause and effect. If we have infused negativity within this confine, let's say the southwest coast or just the west coast of California, there must be a reason. And to assume that that because there are faults along this line, therefore earthquakes occur here more so than in any other area. But that is incorrect, because the first question we must ask is, why are there fault lines in this area and not in another area? In other words, this is the old familiar problem.
Brought to my attention, I should mention, there are elections in Israel this week.
Now the rule goes, that which happens in Israel is ultimately felt throughout the world. If there is conflict in the world, know who is responsible. If the guy in Germany says there is a conspiracy by the Jew, it is true. What is the conspiracy? Because the Jew has not learned yet the idea of unity, of shalom, as the Zohar describes it. And so whatever happens in Israel, if it's fragmentation, if it's disagreement, and miflagot means separation, they call it that, parties. And therefore I can never belong to a party. I may vote for one person over the other, thinking he is less connected to fragmentation and so on. But that will be very significant, that election, knowing that people are still into, each party is into the destruction of the other. Then there will be further chaos all over the world. And if they blame the Jew, they are right. They are right. It is our fault. It is our fault. Not the other way around, that the non-Jew is the reason for our suffering. We have to come to that realization. And as long as we make every attempt to purify ourselves by finding the scapegoat, as a Jew has a beautiful tact, then there is no hope for the Jew in that kind of consciousness. And hopefully, I don't know what can happen in Israel. The only thing that can happen is that everyone begins to realize that buying within himself, it should be such a diversity, so much differences, that each one now realizes that buying within himself, without the interrelationship, without the interconnectedness, like the positive and negative and above, that if they didn't connect with each other, although they are opposites, positive and negative are two opposites, if that can be brought together, then we have to be brought together. And Maybe that's the way it'll happen. There'll be such disintegration in that electoral system to indicate to us that that's not the procedure. Not the procedure. We'll see. Into seven distinct parts. And therefore, the world rests on these seven, meaning the seven spheres, obviously. And therefore, the world rests on seven platelets, like a plate. In other words, there are seven major plates like this, where the entire Earth is located, all around the world. And the reason there are seven is because each one represents another sphera, another form of energy, another type of energy. But earthquakes do not occur only in California, they occur throughout the world. Because there are fault lines, and that's where it usually takes place. But then we have to raise the question, why are certain people drawn to that area when the familiarity with a fault line, San Andreas fault line, which runs through Los Angeles down into Palm Springs, is no secret. And yet people find it difficult to pick themselves up and leave, despite the assurance from researchers that the big one will soon be here. How do they know the big one will soon be here? On what basis? Maybe it won't occur. And if there's so much talk and there has been so much incidents of earthquakes, then why do we still hang out over here? Is it because man's folly of always thinking, well, maybe it won't strike, being in doubt? But we're talking about one's own life. Why would he want to take this chance? The answer is that there are people who are located in this area, and there are those who will not locate here. Why do those people locate where there is the possibility of earthquakes? Obviously, they are drawn because, again, in the book of reincarnation, in the Wheels of a Soul, I made it very clear from the Zohar and from Rabbi Isaac Luria that the earth has its environment. We, as reincarnated individuals, find the proper scenario, find the proper location by which my tikkun, can be accomplished. Those who were not born in Europe and suffer the consequences of a concentration camp were lucky. And those who were born in that vicinity were unlucky. And of course, this is again a rule that we have only applied because, in the absence of any reason, logical, rational reason that we can give, we have to assume that we were just lucky in being born elsewhere. But that again, from a Kabbalistic point of view, the idea of lucky and unlucky just doesn't apply. Unlucky and lucky means that this world, truthfully, was established in such a haphazard manner so that if you're lucky to be located in one place as opposed to another, which is beyond our control. Again, indicating that there are no laws that specifically apply to this universe. The Zohar, of course, is not of that opinion. And therefore, these different interpretations of earthquakes, concentration camps, and why people are located there, and why does evil originate in such a manner there and not elsewhere, is again primarily due to the idea of man's man's negative activity. And so the Zohar explains the first verse, which says ויקח קורח בן יושב בן קט בן לוי ודתם ואבידם בני אליה ואון בן פלד בני רובן. These were the people that Korach took. But he didn't take these people. Everyone understands that it doesn't mean Korach took all of these people with him, because it doesn't, the vocabulary and the structure and the grammar doesn't fit into that kind of an idea that he decided to take people. But, says the Zohar, Korach azil b'machloket. Korach alach b'machloket. Korach was a man who always sought out machloket, which usually means quarrel, or machloket means division, which is closer to the true meaning of the word. Says the Zohar, Maya machloket. What does it mean by machloket? He was just looking to quarrel? Meaning, that was the negative aspect, says the Zohar, no. Machloket comes from the word hachaka v'dichui, shelamala ulamata. He found what he attempted to accomplish as Korach was the idea that this universe is a fragmented universe. Fragmented. As I mentioned last night, the eye is fragmented. Why is the eye fragmented? Because it cannot hear. While essentially, if, as the Zohar and which scientists also agree to some extent only because they haven't found this grand unified theory, meaning that things are not fragmented. There is no division in this universe. There is one total unity. If there is one total unity in the universe, that should apply to the individual as well, because we are not separate from the universe, nor is the universe separate from us. And therefore, the fact that we cannot see voices today, or we cannot hear images, is not because these different faculties, the five senses, haven't the ability to grasp these different concepts as each aspect of this head can grasp individually, but rather everyone is contained of the other, because there is total unity. Because when he says shelamala ulamata, meaning that which is above and that which is below, meaning that what Korach did not believe in, and which he made every attempt to prevent an idea of unity seeping in, was the fact that he considered this universe to be fragmented. And therefore, those who make an attempt to be docher, to remove or push away tikkun olam, the purpose which is to correct this world, and what does that mean? The reason why we're here is to correct the world, because the world essentially appears in a fragmented state. These platelets seem to be divided into seven sections of the universe. There is another indication, and that's what the scientists say. When the platelets begin to rub up against each other, does it happen all the time? No. Does it have to happen? No. Then why does it happen? Don't know. All of this research and discussion is another attempt to duplicate that which Korach attempted, to maintain the division of thought, division of consciousness, the division of sections of the universe, the division of peoples. After all, if Americans speak English, and the French speaks French, and either one doesn't have knowledge of the other language, there must be division. But little does the real reality of our consciousness know that when I hear somebody speak another language that I do not understand, does not mean that I cannot achieve an awareness of what that person is saying. At one time, everyone knew what everyone was saying. It was called one language, Hebrew. People of the Tower of Babel. Why is the Zohar compelled to state that there was one language, and that language was Hebrew, as it says in chapter 11, verse 1, in Bereshit? It says that it was Safa Echad, and everyone agrees there was one language, one language. Vayikal Aretz Safa Echad. Udvarim achadim, and things were in Ardut. Things were unified. Now what comes first? The fact that there was a language and therefore there was unification? Or they were just two separate incidents? It happened to be one language, and there also happened to be a unification of all peoples of the earth, because there was only one language. Says the Zohar that the grand unified theory, or that entity that is called the Grand Unified Theory, which they have already established. On what basis, I don't know. Because if we look around the world, all we see is fragmentation. We see Frenchmen, Germans, Portuguese. All you see is fragmentation, not only in the world, but within a community. Not only within a community, within a family. Not only within a family, but within the individual himself. He's torn. You've heard that expression, he's torn. Meaning, he's fragmented. There are two parts to him. One which doesn't seem to merge with the other. This is what the world appears in. All of a sudden, beginning with Einstein, they have come and they're still seeking out this idea of grand unified theory. And billions and billions and billions of dollars per year is spent on this one idea. How do we find for this element that creates unity? The answer is so simple. It says in Bereshit, but of course you need the interpretation of the Zohar before you can understand the implication of what the verse means. And that is that because there was one language, but it wasn't because there was one language, but the language was Hebrew, because these letters are not merely letters that provide Israelis with a language. But it is a language that unifies. Then you might ask, but take a look at Israel. Why shouldn't the language merge all of these people into one, if that's what they're speaking? But says the Zohar here by Korah, who also spoke Hebrew, that was his language, as well as the rest of the Jews. They did not have, nor did they believe, that this language, known as Hebrew, was a unifying force. They did not believe that you can bring the world together. They did not believe that fragmentation can be done away with. Fragmentation, which is limitation, it must exist in the universe. And therefore, he made an attempt to remove or push away the Tikkun HaOlam. What is the Tikkun HaOlam? What is that Tikkun, meaning the correction of the world? Speaking Hebrew? That's an aspect of it. But before that, says the Zohar, in his mind, he did not want to permit the idea of unity, the idea that we are all one, and yet separate individuals. There's no contradiction. We can all be different and yet be unified. Each one serving a purpose, just like in the simple bulb. You have a plus and a minus when they become a circuit of energy, meaning each one complements the other because this world again must have different aspects to it before we can achieve a correction. Before you can have the light, a light appear in the room, you've got to flip a switch which creates a circuitry in the bulb, which unifies both the plus and the minus pole as one unified whole. Now, without this consciousness that the whole world is one, and quantum says the whole world is one, it is not even a, there is no room for discussion on whether the world is one or not. Quantum established the idea that the world is one. Therefore, they have come to a chaotic result, which, of course, thank God, does not appear publicly. And that is that if someone pulls the trigger and intentionally kills somebody, he could say and claim in court today that scientists have already established the idea that because someone ate rice in China, he coerced me into pulling the trigger. In other words, it's a free universe. This is a conclusion of science. So they believe so much in the idea of a quantum universe, meaning it is all intertwined, it is all interconnected, all interrelated. It is one. But there's a problem. Well, if it's one, where is this thing that makes it one? Because they observe it not to be one. They observe only fragmentation. They observe limitation. If it was one, then me, sitting in this chair, should be able to listen to the whole world at the same time, should be able to see the world at the same time. And yet, I can only see or hear as far as maybe my voice will carry, or as far as the eye can see. So we have this contradiction. But to achieve mastery over your situation, I have to control the whole world. But I cannot control the whole world until I come to the conclusion that, unlike Korach, who decided that this world, the upper and the lower, meaning what? The metaphysical, the existence of unseen powers that have been validated. It's not open for discussion, only for those who refuse to enhance their own lives, and everyone has that right of free will. But if the consciousness that everyone and everything is connected, I did not say we are all one. We are not all one. Just like the table is not one with the chair, but they are interrelated. There is no idea of space, time, and motion between them. Although the table is here and the chair is there, that, says science, is an illusion. Without this comprehension, we just simply cannot approach the idea of control. These platelets that supposedly cause, which they do not, cause the separation is an illusion. Yes, everything of a physical nature is illusion. What does it mean, illusion? If I have $5 in my pocket and I lose it, now I can go back to the time when I had the $5 and say, I once had the $5, but where is it now? Show it to me. If you had it, why don't you have it now? I lost it. Well, what is an illusion? What is an illusion? An illusion is, if you've noticed, a goblet with two noses and a face. If all of you know what I hope I'm referring to, Moshe will provide us with that. One time you see two faces, and one time you see a goblet. Is it a goblet, or is it two faces? Which is it? They move away. They're there, and they're not there. How could you have something there, meaning it's real, because you say, this is what I see, and within a second, you turn to see something else? What is an illusion? An illusion means something that has no eternal stability. What is an illusion? People are illusion. Why are people illusions? They come and go. Things that come to health is an illusion. Why? because it comes and goes. Oh, but it lasts for a certain period of time. Does that constitute non-illusionary effects? Who determined that? Something which is not illusionary should remain permanently. Who says that if it's there just for a second, it's no longer illusionary? Don't we say, in this particular case that Moshe will show us, it's an optical illusion? Why do we call it an optical illusion? Listen to the words we use. An optical illusion. Yes. All right. It's obvious that you see a goblet there. But at the same time, your eye will switch. This is not a very clear... in fact, I think in The Power of One, I think there is there. Then suddenly you see noses. You see eyes over here. You all notice that? I don't think... Even with this simple diagram, I think it's easy enough to detect what I'm referring to. Now, is there a face or is there a goblet? There is both, there is none. We call that an optical illusion. Why do we call it an illusion? Both are there or none are there in the power of one. The idea is that in this world, things that comprise a physical reality is an illusion. I just hope and pray that one day science will not consider us to be that ignorant or that stupid enough that we cannot comprehend what they're trying to say. But they're telling us that there is illusion. They're trying to tell us that there is nothing of reality except consciousness. Some things that if we do not understand does not necessarily mean we should reject them. That's what the Zohar says. The reality of existence is only what you think, what you believe. Well, or what you desire. Well, I desire $1 billion to become placed on this table. Did it happen? Yes. It happened. Well, I don't see it. But we just got through saying the fact that you do not see does not mean that it does not exist. Then where is it? Why can't I use it? Why can't I make use of it? Because, firstly, we do not believe. We do not believe it exists on the table. We do not believe it. We do not believe that our consciousness. Now, you can't say, well, I'll believe that since I want $1 billion to be placed on this table, I'll believe that part. Do you believe everything else in your life concerning that consciousness? Do you believe when the door is closed that you can't open up that door because you haven't got the key? Do you believe you can go through the door? It's not a question of this is what I want. And don't you see, I believe in it for this moment. But the rest of my life is taken up with an illusionary idea that really my mind cannot accomplish what I would like it to accomplish. If someone, Chas v'Shalom, has cancer, his mind, according to science, should remove and eliminate that disease just by declaring that you do not exist. This is scientific fact, and this is also following the laws and principles of the Zohar. The mind is our only reality, but it's something that is difficult to grasp. Not difficult to grasp because it is a deep concept, but rather, how could we look around us and see this physicality and say it does not exist? But again, whether we do understand or do not. And there are many things we do not understand. And we still go ahead with it when you entrust a physician with your life. And you ask him, are you sure that this procedure you recommend will cure? He say, no, I cannot guarantee it. Why aren't you sure? How do you entrust your life to someone who says he's not sure? And then you can even ask him a further question and say, what are the chances of survival?
He says, oh, very good. And you mean it's not 100%? No. Nobody, this is still a procedure which one out of a million will not survive. But you won't be the one out of a million. But someone's going to be the one out of a million. This is the way our minds have decayed. And until we come to that consciousness, we have no control over the world. And according to science, we should have that control over the whole world. To the extent that I should be in a position that these different platelets only occur as a subsequent earthquake is because there is no unity between these two platelets. Who causes that disunity? Man's activity, man's action. That's what the Zohar says. Firstly, he didn't have a consciousness of unity, of upper and lower, meaning the metaphysical and the physical. Metaphysical is not a term that is distant from us. Thought consciousness is metaphysical. Can you put your finger on it? No. Anything that relates to an idea that we cannot package or we cannot encapsulate it is a metaphysical entity. We use the word metaphysical. It's above the physical reality. He did not believe, Korach, says the Zohar, that we can unify. And maybe it's not another one. Huh? Then it's in time zone. But that he did not believe that this physical reality and my mind is interrelated. He did not believe that. He did not believe that we can make physical, any physical entity, behave or react according to my consciousness. He did not believe that. That was number one. And number two, the Zohar says, and this were the two principles. Korach is not here for us to record a story of a man who rebelled, and subsequently there arose an earthquake. Is this the idea that the Torah merely wants to reveal to us some history that occurred in the wilderness? Of course not. Of course not. The Zohar makes it clear that every word, every letter is a force that we should take advantage of. But we must first come to the reality that we believe in it. Because if your consciousness is not there, then you are not there. Then obviously you can never have control. And therefore we see the absence of control all around us. In whatever situation it is, whether it's wealth, health, or happiness. No control. And the reason there is no control, says the Zohar, because he, Korach, did not believe that this world was unified. He did not believe that we can bring together the physical, master the physical by virtue of the metaphysical, by virtue of the mind, the conscious mind. And therefore, his consciousness was Archaka v'dichui shel ha-shalom. What does shalom mean? What does shalom mean? Peace. Something that has eluded mankind since the beginning of Cain and Abel. From that moment on, there was no more shalom. They made a separation. They divided themselves rather than being one unified whole, two aspects of the same whole. They created a condition which is the opposite of shalom. This is what his idea was. Shalom doesn't mean an expression of peace, meaning what? Well, no more wars. No more bloodshed. If you ever hear on the radio, the peace radio in Israel, Begin's famous statement, no more war, no more bloodshed, only peace. Only shalom. That's not true. A person can have internal conflict without bloodshed, without the use of armed force. The idea of shalom means that we come to a realization, and that creates shalom, not only within your own family, not only within your own environment, But it also creates shalom throughout the world. The power of unification, of unity, that the unseen as well as the seen are both realities that can be joined.
Okay.
Maybe it's upside down.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't upside down.
That face has the nose line.
Okay, but you need a clear. You need a clear. Okay, I don't.
Must it be?
Maybe it's in there. Actually, the power of the alphabet. I can't begin. Okay. Now, another important point that is stressed here concerning Korach. Says the Zohar, I'm reading on Daf Bet, second page in the portion of the week of Korach. Misha cholek al shalom. What do you mean cholek? Who argues with peace? So the word here is not he's cholek, meaning he disagrees with peace. That was not his idea. But he divides peace. He divides peace. Peace is a phenomena. Peace is an actual entity that is all around us. All you have to do is have a consciousness that is present, and you would be amazed about how control suddenly appears in your very hands. But we do not believe that there is peace in the world. We don't believe that there is peace within ourselves. But furthermore, says the Zohar, the one who is cholek, the one who brings in fragmentation, separation into shalom, cholek al shemo hakadosh, mishum sheshmo hakadosh nikra shalom. Shmo hakadosh, his holy name. What does that mean, his holy name? As we began off by indicating from the Tower of Babel people that they had one language. Every letter, aside from what you have learned, that every letter created the universe. Look how powerful Avraham Avinu considered the power of the alphabet. That it could create every letter. The world was created with a bet. And every star, every constellation, every planet, the three entities of fire, water, and air were created by letters. This is the power of a letter. Now, if that letter can control so vast a universe, so vast a planet like sun, then those letters in our hands should be able to produce, if not the idea of creating universes, which is possible, according to the Zohar, but at least to inject a positive force into this universe merely by injecting the Hebrew letters. Therefore, since I entered into the world of Kabbalah, I realize that when the idea began where we cannot understand the letters, well, read the prayers in other languages. They missed the boat. They took away from the people. They took away from the people the one advantage that we all have, and that is the Hebrew language. There is no other power at our disposal that can create control in our lives as these letters. Therefore, we have a Nana Bakoach also structured very specifically, which is the Shem HaKadosh. What do you mean Shem HaKadosh? The holy name of God? No. Because Kadosh, as you know, means holy, but it doesn't mean holy in a sense, in its corrupted sense of H-O-L-Y, as you've learned here in the sessions of Kabbalah, it means W-H-O-L-L-Y. These letters constitute unification. Oh, Kabbalah for the name of three. Okay. Does everyone see the two black faces two black faces. Everyone sees two black faces staring at each other. Now, if you stop thinking for a minute about the two black faces, then what do you have? The disappearance of the two black faces, and you have a goblet. That's how simple it is. Everyone. That means we all see the same, don't we? Although we've always been taught that everyone sees whatever he wants to see. But this is undeniable. Undeniable. The Shema Kadosh means the names, the structure of the words are holy. This is the secret of the grand unified theory, gut, as it is known in scientific terms. Gut, something that this only the scientists are privy to. Only they can understand or look for this grand unified theory. There it is. Shema Kadosh. These letters, the way they are constructed and the way they are structured, indicates for us a weapon, a force by which we can create unity. What does that do for us? In simple terms, I bring unity to the entire universe. That's wonderful too. Does that mean I can create unification between nations and so there is no necessity for bloodshed? Or does it also indicate to us that when I said the eye can only see, but the eye can hear too, that the ears can see, that every part of our body takes in everything that exists in the universe? That is the singular purpose of reading of the Torah and reading of Parshat Korach. Parshat Korach and everything that is contained in Parshat Korach. And I will tell you, not that I am a prophet, but this week we shall see dramatic instances, and only you will see those instances as being dramatic instances of fragmentation, separation. This week, because this parsha would not be read this week, if it wasn't there for the express purpose by God and by the sages to give us tools by which we can operate, by which we can prevent all of these disasters that are always occurring in our lives. That's why we're reading this week Parshat Korach. Maybe Chas V'Shalom this week should be an earthquake. Certainly this week there will not be an earthquake. Why will there not be an earthquake this week? Because there will be, and it doesn't require all the peoples, but there will be at least 10 people who will have this consciousness that this week's Parsha is going to stave off an earthquake. Unfortunately, it only applies for 6 more days after Shabbat. Only for 6 days. But we are certain that those who have that consciousness will find their vision, if they have this consciousness, will find their vision improved, their hearing improved. They hear things that they didn't hear last week. Things of this nature. We're not in the game as I said last night, morality. Don't steal. Don't kill. Don't do this. Don't do that. The whole world doesn't listen to that. Because the world is not ready. Nor even on Mount Sinai was the world ready to listen to commandments. In fact, it is human nature. When you are told to do something, like a child, when you tell a child he must do that, he will look for every avenue to do the opposite. It is human nature. Therefore, the Ten Commandments could not have come down to us as an idea of do it this way, do it that way. No, it was 10 utterances. It was 10 utterances. It was 10 packets of energy that were placed in this world to be used by those who know to remove fragmentation, to remove the disunity. And only those who are not aware of this grand unified theory known as the Alabet, which is the grand, therefore it says, Devarim Achadim. Because the language, the Hebrew language, that was the cause. That was the reason why there was Devarim Achadim. Things were unified. Things were Echad. Why were they Echad? It says they were. But they weren't Echad because they were. There was never Echad. In fact, says the Zohar, these people, the power of Babel people, were completely unified in their objective of negativity and evil in the world. And because they had achieved unity through the Alabet, now that doesn't mean unity cannot be a gathering of people to steal or to murder. If there is total unity, they must be successful. And therefore, the only choice that was left to God was to create many languages. And that disrupted the unity that existed because of the Hebrew alphabet. It's the power of the Hebrew alphabet. How many of us make use of it? Thank God, there are tens of thousands of people who do not know the alphabet, and every morning with their talit and tefillin, scan the whole prayer. And ask every single one of them, what do you feel? I feel something. I feel different than when I first came into the site. But he doesn't know a word he's reading. He doesn't even know the alphabet. Not important. As I said, this eye is no less than the scanner in the department store. If that scanner in the department store can accomplish unification, brings together the diversity of what this purchase means. It means removal of inventory. It means adding money to the treasury of the company. It has many implications. This one act, it means what product was chosen. After all, there are many cereals. It also tells you which cereal. There are so many implications by this one act of scanning. Look at what it entails. Look what it contains. And we have the secret. We have the secret. But it's being denied, or it was denied, but no longer. No longer is this idea going to be concealed. It's here for everyone to take it. And only through this idea of a thought that we can accomplish unification within my own body, within my own self, within my own family, within the whole world, then we can accomplish that idea of unification. Then, if the cause of earthquakes is the beating of these two platelets against each other, why are they beating against each other? Because they're two fragmented halves. But if they are brought into unity, then they live right side by side, which was the original intent of God when he created these seven platelets in the first place. The only reason why there are seven, because that distinguishes people. That people, in order to accomplish their tikkun, some would have to be placed in Europe. But if those European Jews had been given not only the right to study Kabbalah, but had been given that method, it could never occur. Never. As it didn't occur in North Africa. As it did not occur in North Africa. Every one of those countries, Tunis, Morocco, the king of Morocco gets up and says, "You Germans can't touch these Jews. What are you talking about?" I mean, was there anyone who could stop it? Could the army of Morocco stop it?
Think for a moment. Who is this king of Morocco? What does his army consist of? 25 soldiers? And he got up and said, no, I won't hand over one Jew to you. I know, and that's, I was very curious until I found the answer. I realized what the answer was. Only when I found out that the Ari HaKadosh had sent 10 of his students to Morocco, then I realized what Morocco was about. Why did he send them there? If we know it is one of those energy centers of the world, the power of the Zohar. These people lived, ate and drank Zohar. It is only today that the corrupt Moroccan rabbis, and I call them that because they are the most violent, incidentally, and I can understand it, coming from a place, from a background, with such powerful energy in the Atlas Mountains. You go there, you can cut it with a knife, but only if you're in tune. Only if you're ready to accept these ideas of energy powers and energy systems throughout the world. If you haven't got this consciousness, then of course you can't achieve making use or coming or hear the reading of the particular reading of that Shabbat. And it's not easy to come to that consciousness. That's why we need the Zohar for support. The minute you walk out of here, if you're in business, there will be the bank manager calling you up and say, look, you're overdrawn. Well, you're overdrawn. But you know how easy it is to convince him that not only are you overdrawn, but I want to extend and I want to increase my loan. When Mexico comes to the United States and says, I can't pay my $6 billion loan, but if you give me another three, we'll restructure it. And America agreed. I mean, that's certainly logical. I'm telling you that if there was a total consciousness of our individual power supported by a system, then if I'm having difficulties in a business, it's a total illusion. Illusion means like that diagram. There are two parts, you see, but you can't bring them together at the same time. You can't see one at the same time see the other. But that's an illusion. It's called an illusion. Why do we call it an illusion? Don't believe it. What does an illusion mean? Don't believe it. If Doug Henning can make the Statue of Liberty disappear, or a Boeing 747 disappear, we all know it's an illusion, but we did see it disappear. But we know it's an illusion, even though the eye saw that kind of action of the removal and disappearance of that Statue of Liberty. We call it an illusion. Why? Because we know somewhere, there is no disappearance. Somewhere a bank manager can't call me up and say, you have no money. Who says I have no money? He does. How does he know? Well, you're overdrawn. Can I change that with my consciousness? There is absolutely no question from a Zohar point of view, but what is more important is the scientists substantiate this idea and say there is nothing in this universe but consciousness. Do not be governed by the physical reality that you see about you, because that physical reality is only governed by what you believe it to be. Let's believe them, and let's also believe the Zohar. But surrounded by our daily fragmentation, by our daily feeling of non-confidence, there is a recession. Now that there's a recession, you know what that means. You must do less business. Well, I have heard of other companies doing more business. I know of people who are not suffering because of the recession. You mean they are lucky? Because they are lucky. Well, why can't I become lucky like them becoming lucky? It shows you where our minds are. And if we cannot improve and raise this consciousness, then there is no hope. Like there has been no hope for the past 5,000 years. There is no hope. But I do not subscribe to the idea that God created a universe that was destined to remain fragmented. And then the Zohar continues, Borei Ein Haolam Omed Ela Al Shalom. The world stands on Shalom. Now we know what Shalom means. It doesn't mean peace. It doesn't mean peace. Shalom means unification. The world, to be a good place to live in, must consist of the shalom. And therefore, when the Zohar in Pashat Naso says, Moshe tells Rabbi Shimon that in the age of Aquarius, only your book, the book of Zohar, will bring about the realization of Mashiach, will bring about the realization of Eitz HaChayim in this world. Eitz HaChayim, as we know, is the consciousness of man. We do have that consciousness. As I mentioned last night, and I mentioned on Shavuot, the idea of the Zohar, which is being revealed to us, being revealed to me. I didn't think about it last year, so it was revealed to me, and it's being revealed to everyone, that we do have two bodies. We have the consciousness, which is called Eitz HaChayim, and then we have the eyes that can only see, supposedly, the nose that can only smell. But we know of individuals that can smell with their eye. You ever see a Persian go like this? You ever see him go like that? You know what he wants to say with that? What the eye doesn't see. See, he's expanding his eye. He doesn't know why he's doing it, but it's an indication. Go look for a little more than what you see. Don't trust the eye. What do you mean, don't trust the eye? What else? What else is there, if not for the eye? No, expand it. Expand it. I like that. Of course, he doesn't know what he's doing, but I like it. I like it. Expand the physical eye. See beneath. That which you cannot see. Maybe you can only hear. You can hear a heartbeat. Can you see a heartbeat? Yes, you can only see it on a screen. But you can't see the heartbeat itself. You can hear the heartbeat. Wrong. The same way as we can observe it on a screen, we should be able to see that heartbeat as we hear the heartbeat with a stethoscope. We should be able to see it. That physician who is fragmented, therefore, comes up with sometimes not the correct diagnosis, because all of his faculties do not operate as one unified whole. The mind thinks one thing, the ear hears another, and the eye hears another. But this world was not established originally as this idea. And therefore, the Eitz HaChayim, we have a code name for it. Beautiful name. Tree of Life. But what does it mean, Tree of Life? It means that this Zohar, the letters, the ideas, are absolutely correct. And we do not necessarily need verification or confirmation by the scientists. But at the same time, let us understand that even a person like Korach, who did not believe in the essential unification of this universe, but saw everything as fragmented, saw every human being as separate from the other. This is what all of this is about. And you begin to study and go delve into each word. It becomes beautiful. It's not merely a recording of history. But each word with this essential idea that his consciousness was trained to see and observe this world as a world of fragmentation, a world that we cannot achieve that which we want. Don't even request it. Don't ask for miracles. Don't ask for miracles. That is completely contrary to the Zohar interpretation of a very simple idea in the splitting of the Red Sea. For most Jews and all those Bible readers of other religions, understand the Red Sea to be, the splitting of the Red Sea to be what? A miracle. A miracle. A miracle, a phenomena that was created by God and God himself. And that's a total corruption. It's not what the verse says. We are the only ones who can create miracles. And where does it say in the Torah? And I read you just that one section in Bishalah, where we have the splitting of the Red Sea. When there we find the Jew in front of him, the Red Sea, and in back of him, the Egyptians, and naturally, he begins to scream and yell. And he says, Bayoma, and now the Jews are naturally and rightfully have a valid complaint. Why did you take us out of Egypt? To die, either at the hands of the Egyptians or drown in the Red Sea. Bayoma Hashem lo Moshe. And God says to Moshe, Matitzakelai, why are they yelling to me? Well, did you ever hear a Jew in synagogue not pray to God? Especially if he has some problems. I mean, where else is he going to go and pray to, if not to God? And God says, why are they yelling to me? Well, who else should we yell if we were in that circumstance when you're in trouble? No other alternative but to pray to God. If they want to create the miracle of the Red Sea, they have to jump in. What do you mean, they have to jump in? How do you jump into to a sea that is maybe 300 feet in depth? How do you jump in? That's what Moshe was being told by God. Every aspect of this physical universe, meaning acquiring loans, meaning not going hungry, all of these ideas, or like a king of Morocco standing up to the hordes and armies of Germany and saying, no, you're not going to take one Jew out of here. And he couldn't take one Jew out of any part of North Africa. When we know that the SS, who were in charge of this final solution, said the army comes second, the elimination of Jews come first. If we need transportation to transport these Jews to their death, although you may need arms, munition, medicine, food, you will have to wait. This was so logical. That the army would have to wait until they had no longer any use for these transport wagons. That was the essential idea of their war. Coming into North Africa, they couldn't remove a Jew. Why? The physical element was against the Jews, not only surrounded by Arabs. But there they were, overrun by these Germans. What brought about that? Why don't we pay enough attention to that miracle? The answer is because the Jews were creating miracles each and every single day. They were tapping the energy that was there in that area, in that region. And their energy and their vehicle for tapping that energy was the Zohar. Only when they came to Israel did they realize they no longer had need for the Zohar. This is the way they were convinced. Be like the rest of them. Now enjoy your misery. And that's all. That's all those Moroccans have in Israel, is misery. Second-class citizens, and etc. This is what they left. This is what they left to occupy the jails, be the 60 or 70% majority of all inmates in jails. This is what they abandoned to turn into those kind of people because they were told this was no longer needed by their leaders, by their rabbis. No longer needed. The protection of Israel should suffice. But I haven't known another country that had six wars in 40 years. I don't know of another nation that exists in this whole world that had six wars in their time of existence. I mean, where's this protection that everyone is speaking about? That there was no longer the need for a Zohar. This is the structure for the grand unified theory. The letters themselves provide us with control over the cosmos. The letters, each of which created the cosmos, provide us with this assistance and support. But the idea that we must study the Zohar, study for what purpose? Because when you read these words, and the further you delve into it, the stronger the connection, the stronger the channeling, yes. But at least at its very minimum, we have made connections to a grand unified theory, of which means there is no fragmentation, there is no limitation, there is no chaos, there is no disorder. That's what this parsha is all about. Nothing more and nothing less. Now there's one other Zohar that I would like to know. One other Zohar that he refers to. In Bamidbar, the end of Bamidbar, very few people pay attention even to this idea. But at the very end of the first parsha in Bamidbar, at the end, literally the last few verses, the tribe of Kahat, they were the tribe of Levi. That's why he brings it in with Korach. It's the same essential idea. These people, there were three sons of Levi, but each one of the tribe of Levi had a certain chore that they were to fulfill in the temple or in the tabernacle. And it says in the verse, this is what they should do, Zosatu lahem v'chayu, that they should live v'lo yamutu, and they should not die, b'gishtam mekodesh hakadashim. That means that when the Jews were told to move on, what they did is disassemble the tabernacle. And the idea of this Kodesh Kadashim, the holiest of holies, meaning where the broken scroll was placed into this Aron, and that's where the idea of having the Torah in the Aron originated, that when they had to disassemble or assemble, they were told, because they were instructed with the disassembling or assembling of the tabernacle, that the Kodesh HaKadoshim, meaning the Ark and the scroll, the broken scroll of which Moses brought down from Mount Sinai, just Aaron uvanav yavo v'samu otam, only they were permitted to touch it. V'lo yavo lirot kivala et haKodesh v'metu. And these people, the tribe of Kahat, should not come to see the Kodesh HaKadoshim in its naked state, kivala et haKodesh v'metu, when the holiness was being swallowed up because they can die. Now, if you know a little Hebrew, you know what Kabbalah means. Swallowed up. But actually, what they're talking about here, that it was the duty of the Kohen to cover up so that it should not be observable. That's what it just said. In order that these people will not die, because if they just saw the Aron, and that's why the reason for the covering, etc., because if they saw and observed the physical configuration of this scroll as it was being swallowed up. Now, all translations, whether it be French, English, etc., use the word to cover, kisui, because what is it talking about? Talking about first the Kohen was supposed to cover it. First the Kohen was to cover it, and then they would be permitted to carry it, because they could then no longer see it. Now, you know that if I were to put this napkin around this, you still see this microphone, don't you? You know what's below this covering, and so on. The reason the Torah says Kabbalah, and unlike the translation as you will find in the usual Chumash, which means swallowed up and not covering, because the word would not be lirot kivalah et hakodesh, it would be be'et when they are mechaseh et hakodesh. That would be the proper word for it. It says swallowed up. What does it mean, swallowed up? Were the Kohen, with spreading the sheet around it, swallowed it up? There are actually two aspects to the eye. Like in our diagram of the nose and the goblet. When it's covered up, and therefore the Torah does not insert the word covering, but bala, to swallow up. When something is swallowed, I put food in my mouth. Is it just that I've now placed a covering over the food? No. Soon I open up my mouth, and what happened? Like a magician. Where did it go to? Right? You know when he pulls out the egg from this covering? No egg. It was swallowed up. Not that it was concealed, and I can't see it, because even in concealment I can still imagine. What the Kohen did here, says the Torah, just as by Korach, these people were swallowed up. What does it mean they were swallowed up? What Moshe and Aaron, of course the time does not permit me to go into the details, but if I have, I'll try to do that on Shabbat, but those who have not attended this morning's session, for me to charge right into the idea of livloa. You know what livloa means? The thing ceases to exist. It ceases to exist. When you cover something and nobody can see it, like a Doug Henning covers the Statue of Liberty and none of us can see it. It was right there in front of our eyes, and now some illusion entered and now I don't see it. But it hasn't been swallowed up. I know in my mind it's still there. The Torah here wants, and that relates to Korach, that's why he brings this idea, that if you have the right consciousness, and the ones who had the right consciousness was the Kohen. He, at that level, literally, can make not only it disappear, but disappear as if it does not exist. As if it does not exist. The same about if someone has cancer, to cover up the cancer, cut out the cancer, does it mean it's no longer there? No. It has to be like Bila HaMavet LaNetzach, when it says that on Mount Sinai, revelation of the light not only removed death, but it swallowed it up. Swallowing means not that it was there, but it had no power to express itself. Not only is like a slave, that you bind a slave, and no longer is he a free man to exercise his mind, his body. It was swallowed up. Death was swallowed up, meaning it disintegrated from being a force. That's what Kibbalah. When I take a piece of fruit into my mouth, and I chew it, and I digest it, it no longer is a piece of fruit. It wasn't merely concealed. It was swallowed up. The same idea is the power of the Kohen. Korach wanted that power. He said, I'm a Levi. So is Aaron a Levi. If he has the power to make things disappear, physical matter disappear as if they do not exist, then why not me? Says the Zohar, he saw things that were not part of him. He did not achieve the degree of consciousness that the Kohen did. Therefore, the Kohen is the one who channels blessings or refuah, healing. That's what the hands of the Kohen is all about. That he can channel, because he was such a pure channel. He was kadosh. He was complete, meaning what? The two bodies in himself did not interact with each other any longer as two separate beings, but rather one body, the Yetzer Hayim, completely swallowed up the negativity that existed in the other aspect. He, Korach, wanted this power of swallowing up, but yet he recognized the fragmentation in the universe. Why does it say Vahi Eda Vahi Boker Yom Echad the first day? It doesn't say Yom Rishon, as you've learned in the Kabbalah classes. Echad means that everything remains as they were. The table remains a table, the chair remains a table. But, which our consciousness, our rationale cannot grasp, they are interconnected with each other. There is no separation. The same way as the eye can hear. There is no separation. He did not believe in the idea of unification or of unity. Therefore, says the Zohar, he wanted that which did not belong to him. He wanted the high priesthood. Why did he want the high priesthood? He says, I'm also a Levi. And Aaron, before he became the high priest, was also a Levi. Why is he different than me? But Aaron, if you know the story, you read it in the Power of the Olipet, what was the significant characteristic of Aharon? You remember? Shalom. He always made attempts to bring peace, whether it was a family quarrel between a man and a wife or friends, etc. His one characteristic was to bring peace. Anyone in this universe, Jew and non-Jew alike, if they have an objective on how to divide, they can never achieve what we're talking about. But if we can, and we need the support of the Zohar and everything else, can come to this realization that things are one, things are not separated, that if I need money now and it's not in my grasp, if it's in the bank, it's mine. If it's in the bank, it's mine. We all smile. Could this be true? The answer is yes. And the only reason we do not believe it's true is because this 1% of satanic consciousness, this 1% body, which is destined to inflict all of the pain that we suffer, is because of this one fellow who was not swallowed up, who did not become part of the Yetzer Hayim which is in us. But all of these far-fetched things, as things that are not within our grasp, is because we have already established in our minds that there is no hope, there is no way I can save the situation. It is because you decided, and not God.